In the meantime, the rest of you have gone down to this inn called the Yellow Feather. You don't have to look too long, actually, because fairly soon after you arrive, you can see sitting at one of the far tables, drinking in the company of what looks like a dwarf mason. You can tell that because of a sturdy stone hammer at the belt of this dwarf. You can see Bruno. And Coriander, you probably recognize him at the same time as certainly Granny and definitely Bilbo do. Because he looks very much like a meaner and larger version of his younger sister, Lobelia. Very much in that...
Shook my spear in his face.
he's about 50, but looks, you know, at least 15 to 20 years older than that. And looks, as I say, very meaner and larger version of Lobelia. And he's sort of laughing loudly and talking with this dwarf when you first come upon him.
So we take it he's a mean man. Is he a mean man?
Well, or at least not to be messed with.
Okay. I form instantaneous senses of like who Coriander would, you know, think of as a nice relative and a relative to be avoided.
Yep.
I think that she has a lot of goodwill and fascination with her Auntie Primrose, but people who are a normal age are not as interesting and therefore just don't have as much to recommend them outside of their natural charms. And if his are lacking, then I think that she doesn't have the same regard for him that she would have for Auntie Primrose. So what she'll do though is she'll turn to her Uncle Bilbo and say, "Uncle Bilbo, would you like me to go and talk to him? Because I just feel like perhaps we should not come on too strong. I don't know the situation, but maybe I could just go and say hello, and then and we can ask gently about the fireworks."
Well, and he sort of like thinks about it and he says, I suppose, my dear, but if he starts acting, you know, he like turn and leave. But if he starts, yeah.
So she's going to saunter over to his table and he's with people?
He is with one person. I mean, there's a bunch of tables around him, but he's with one person. This what looks like a dwarven mason, if you had to guess.
So I think that actually she might approach a little stealthily and try to overhear what they're talking about before making herself known.
That sounds like a stealth check to me. Hello, Livestream.
Yes.
I'm going to have you, by the way, Coriander, I'm going to have you do this at disadvantage, although I will give the chat an opportunity to inspire if they wish. The reason I'm doing this is that you are doing this when it's still daylight, albeit later daylight, and you are literally... tables everywhere as you're doing this, so you're a little bit of a negative for that.
Sure. Sorry, I.
While we wait for chat to catch up to the idea of inspiring.
Yes. So chat can do that. Up to chat. You know, it is just the beginning of the month, so we do have a fair bit of a number of tabletop campaigns this month, but just keep that in mind.
So when Bilbo says that, you know, if he starts to get and. It just kind of clears his throat, sort of ripples his fingers, you know, along the haft of his spear, and it's just like, in a sort of a, like, I'm really good with this, don't worry about it, you know, kind of thing. It's like just...
Yep.
She's got Overwatch, don't worry about it.
I have a quick question. I'm sorry, it's because we haven't played in a long time. Last time we played, I think I brought up the expertise trait.
Yes.
Which is that at first level, you choose any combination of two of your skill and tool, any combination of two of your skill and tool proficiencies. Your proficiency bonus is doubled for any ability check you make that uses either of the chosen proficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking through to see if I had chosen two things. I know I chose one thing for sure, which is acrobatics.
Right.
And I can't remember if the second thing had been the thieves' tools, which I don't know how it would be marked, because it doesn't, it's like, I don't know if it's an ability or tool. Like, the tool check confuses me, because I can't see what it, but I
proficiency. Look down my...
Hmm?
Tool proficiency check.
So, wait, like, I don't know how it would work, essentially.
It basically works like a skill, but it's
like
more
a skill.
Specific.
So I would, like, click, if I was going to use thieves' tools, which I'm not doing right now, but I would click thieves' tools,
right.
And it would just... like a normal thing.
That's right. And it'll be looking for like, and that'll be something used for like lock picking, disabling traps, things like that.
There
would
it
be
is.
What
I
that
see.
Is
okay.
for. I thought, Amal, that you did that one because you, yeah, I think you, I remember you telling me that you're like, I have a feeling I'm going to use this a fair bit in terms of like wanting to not, you know, get in places I shouldn't or whatever. I think.
I see that I have the expertise level in there now. I didn't know where to look for it. So, okay great. Cool. So that's taken care of. I just wanted to double check that I wasn't saving it to use on something and that I had meant it for stealth.
Yeah.
So I didn't. And here we go. So just a stealth roll at disadvantage.
But that's right. And looks like we're going to stay with that.
And roll two nat 20s.
And live suing, you can, there's two things. You can purchase one by getting, by supporting, by subbing to the channel at tier two. It is September. We have a subathon coming at the end of the month. Or Patreon support, or you could also get one of the channel point ones. I think it's 50,000 is what it costs, channel points.
$50,000.
50,000 points. And there's two of them right now. Okay. So.
It's okay. I'm glad to not have wasted an inspiration.
Yeah. In this case, so live suing, you do have an inspiration now because you redeemed one of them and there's one of two. So there's one left. So thank you for doing that. So you'll have an inspiration, which I'm going to give you right now, actually, which you can use later. Doesn't have to be used right this second.
It shouldn't be used right now.
Live suing was going to maybe give you one, but does not matter because wouldn't
roll
help here.
Nine.
So yeah. So I would say, Coriander, the way this looks is that you're kind of like, you know, carefully moving through and like, you know, there's the, you know, the ambient, you know, noise of people speaking to each other and so forth, and some music drifting on the air and people enjoying their food and drink. As you get somewhat close, you can sort of like make your way up, and you can see at one point that Bruno has got his glass, his mug up to his, not his glass, his mug up to his lips and is like, and it sort of stopped looking at you, Coriander. And although you'd like to convince yourself, like, he doesn't see me, he's just looking in my direction. He's clearly looking at you.
Do I overhear anything before he notices me?
Unfortunately, no, because you were just getting close enough that you could hear over the sound of the crowd. Because they were talking not very loudly. They're definitely not talking secretly. They were just sort of like chatting about something. He does recognize you a little bit. It seems like he recognizes you a bit.
As soon as he makes eye contact, she will actually like smile very brightly and hop forward and say, "Uncle Bruno, hello."
And he kind of looks, and the mason sort of turns around, and Bruno says, it's young Coriander, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, thank you for remembering. I know it's been a little while.
What are you doing? You're pretty far away from your home, aren't you?
I am. We've been having a little bit of an adventure. I'm here with my granny and a few other people. Hello, she says to the dwarf, and she like drops a little curtsy.
He has a big, fierce red beard and like flowing red hair. And when you say that, he's like, you know, sort of kind of like taciturn, but you know, just nods in your direction.
My name is Coriander Took.
And he nods. He does not give you his name back. He just doesn't seem to have a lot of social graces. He just kind of nods in your general direction. And then he doesn't turn away, but he kind of moves his chair slightly so that, you know, you can see him and Bruno. And Bruno says, it seems a little late for you to be out there with, you say your granny's with you.
Yes, Granny Lavender. Well, can I tell you why we're here? I'm so sorry to interrupt. I don't want to interrupt your meeting.
I suppose. What's it all about then?
Well, I heard, and I don't know if you can tell me if it's true or not, I heard you might have been setting off some fireworks. She stage whispers, fireworks, to him.
And his eyes widen a little bit, and his kind of like neutral expression sort of twists a bit into a frown, and he says, "Well, I don't know where you would have heard that nonsense from. I'm not setting off fireworks here."
Can I do an insight check?
Sure. By the way, can I assume that Granny and Titch are... Because Bilbo is waiting, although Bilbo, you can see, is getting ready to walk forward and start talking in a minute. He's back far enough that he doesn't hear exactly what's being said. I assume, Granny and Titch, that you're doing the same, like you're kind of giving a little bit of a buffer for... But correct me if I'm wrong, if that's not true.
Oh, Granny, we're totally eavesdropping.
Okay.
That's what you mean.
Yeah, well, so the question I have for you, Granny, is do you want to stealth your way up, or are you going to just sort of like... Because the point is, right now, he only sees Coriander. He has not seen the rest of you yet.
The thing is, he might simply not recognize Granny.
Possibly, I don't know yet.
Like, they probably don't know that each other that well. Seen each other, like, a few times, maybe.
Right.
So she would probably just, lead the guys to a free table in the vicinity.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, Coriander will say, that would be how... So you didn't set off any... I was sort of hoping to see some fireworks, and it's a little, and I, wow.
Well, fireworks can be dangerous, you know. You can't just set that off anywhere you want. I mean, sometimes, fireworks are meant to be kept, careful-like, and, you gotta be super careful about them, so that's what I know about fireworks. Not that I have any personal experience, you understand.
Bruno, I am so happy to hear you say so. That is what my Uncle Bilbo has been saying all this time. Uncle Bilbo! Uncle Bilbo, come here!
So Bilbo takes a few steps forward. The minute that happens, when you say Bilbo, Bruno looks like he's just sucked on a lemon, and he's like,
Bilbo, you say?
And, yes, it turns out that the two of you have the same views on fire safety, because Uncle Bilbo saw the fireworks and was very concerned about the proper fire safety for the area. He said that we should absolutely investigate the matter, and then I'm sure he can tell you all about it. So I'm so glad to know you're in agreement about this. Perhaps you can help us find who set off the fireworks. Isn't that right, Uncle Bilbo?
And Bilbo, who looks quite right, my dear. And he has this kind of like searching expression. And Bruno is like, so, Baggins? And he kind of like tilts his head. And Bilbo says, Brace Girdle. And there's just sort of this pause. Tumbleweed blows behind them on the road. Just to be clear. the swinging tavern door. Right. And the piano player immediately stops playing and leaves. No, sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mel. What were you saying?
Oh, no. Coriander's just looking from the one to the other.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty obvious even to Coriander that these people do not like each other. And Bruno is like, so, you've decided to get them all caught up in another one of your mad adventures, have you, Baggins? I would have hoped you might have grown up out of it after another 15, 20 years. And Bilbo kind of, more or less, Bilbo just kind of nods slowly, and he says, well, for some of us, it's hard to remember what it was like to be young. Right, Bruno? And kind of stares back. Bruno was like, at this point, you can see that the dwarf mason is kind of like, now, not in a scared way, he's like, I'm just going to move back out of the way here.
Casually.
And at this point, I would say, Cal, that you would probably have walked over, and you can see the showdown, the Bruno Bilbo showdown right here with Coriander near the two of them. And you've got the table. So, Cal, you could join up with Granny and Titch. Balin is at the table, although Balin is also looking with some interest at what's going on with Bilbo. Bilbo's standing with Coriander at this other table where Bruno is and this dwarven mason. So you could go wherever you like, Cal. The table is probably close enough that you think you could probably hear what's being said, But obviously you could totally hear it's being said if you're right with them. So it's up to what you want to do.
I figure that Cal is wandering around like a little troubadour, walking between the tables, singing some song of friendship, and like leans in like, guys, knock it off. You know? Kind of
like... It's lovely to Cal be hobbits together. You know?
He'll head towards the group and, probably go wherever Granny is right now.
Okay. And Bruno sort of, well, I wouldn't know much about that. It's difficult these days to sometimes be a respectable hobbit when you have others filling children, impressionable children's heads with adventures. But perhaps you know what that means. And Bilbo says, I do. Impressionable children. Children who could, for example, find themselves at danger at the wrong end of a firework. And sort of stares at Bruno. And Bruno kind of looks back and says, I don't know what you mean. It's the second time I've heard this nonsense about fireworks. All I know about fireworks is you want to be careful around them. All I make sure that I do is give myself a little bit of distance from all that nonsense. And he kind of...
Do you not like fireworks?
And you asked this to Bruno?
Yeah.
I assume. And Bruno kind of, he says... I suppose they're fine in their way. But at some point, you might grow out of them, you see. They're not as interesting to certain people once you've reached a certain age. And he kind of glares at Bilbo. Very clearly not paying... I mean, he answered your question, but not very much paying attention to you. And Bilbo's like, that's fascinating. Because we just heard from your mother that you did, in fact, set off some fireworks. And... Is there a word for like when the lemon eating the lemon has doubled in intensity? Like we've enhanced like lemon on steroids. It's now lemon plus lime. I don't know. He's like he now looks like he's like, what do you have to say? Speak your piece and get out. And Bilbo says, I was just hoping to find out what you did with these things given to you by a certain wizard. And so he's sort of glaring back at so again daggers. Now you don't actually think that this would fall to blows. It's not really what the hobbits would do necessarily, but and now you can note that some of the close tables have sort of stopped their drinking and they're all kind of like leaning in a little bit, listening, because this is much more interesting than whatever they were talking about.
Can I do another insight check?
Maybe. What are you? But what? Maybe if you're looking for something different, what is the? Are you looking to see if Bruno is lying? What do you think about?
So initially, I wanted to see just if Bruno was lying because he was like, "I've never heard of fireworks in my life," you know, or whatever. And then now though, I think it's more like, I mean, the thing she knows that he did because of the previous information.
Yeah.
I think what she wants to know is. Why is he lying about it? Or like, I guess a sense of like, was it an accident that he's covering up or does he intend to do this again for some reason?
Okay, that's fair. Let's have an insight check and let's see how that goes.
Right. Roll high.
Roll high. Roll insight.
See, that wasn't so difficult.
18.
Yeah, Coriander, it's clear to you that Bruno is definitely concealing something, and certainly knowledge of the fireworks is among those things, is the thing that he's concealing. What you're not sure about is whether he's concealing it because he's afraid of something or because he's going to do it again or because they're my fireworks and you can't have them, my precious. Like, you don't really know what exactly his thing is because it seems like an odd thing to be concerned about. To you, but he's definitely concealing something and you might have to do some work to kind of convince him to tell you basically whatever it is that he's concealing or tell any of you, the group of you.
She's this is going to be a bit of a weird thing, but she's going to sort of swivel her gaze from Bruno to the dwarf, the redheaded dwarf, and she's just going to say to him point blank, I'm so sorry, did you see the fireworks?
And the mason kind of like glances at Bruno, who glances back at him, and then he says, "Yep."
And do you know why they were set off? Or what were the circumstances surrounding them?
Nope. And then drinks.
What was your name?
And he pauses, and then he says, "Rockholm."
Oh,
sorry. Wait,
what did he say?
Rockholm. I thought about just calling him Rock for a minute, but I was like, no, Rockholm.
Rock. That sounds like an offensive dwarven stereotype of a name.
Well, no, it's pronounced. It's spelled.
Yeah, I'm a dwarf and my name is Rock. I'm sorry. It's like, that's like being like, I'm a human and my name is Meat.
Human. Hmm.
You'll notice that that's how it's actually spelled. So.
Wait, how's it? Wait, where did this go? Rock-om.
But really? Yeah. But right. Like, so your reaction, like, though, is exactly that, where you're just kind of like, what?
Rock-om?
Like, what? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to call him Rockholm in my head.
Rockholm.
Oh. All right. Well, it was very nice to make your acquaintance. I hear that I don't understand, Uncle Bruno. Why aren't... I mean, could we see the fireworks? Could we go and look at them?
How can I show you something that I don't actually have?
Well, your mother said you have them. Do you think she's... lying?
Are you saying my mother's a liar?
I'm asking you if you are saying your mother's a liar.
What?
And then he's sort of realizes he's been backed into a corner. And then he says, why are you berating me, child? There's no reason to attack me when I'm just here having a drink here with Rockholm.
Oh, Bruno, I am not attacking you. I will say we did walk all throughout the night on this very important errand, and we're very tired, and we went by your mother's home, and this is what she told us, and we came here to look for you because of what she said, and I just don't understand why you would be telling us that you don't have the fireworks when she said that you do, and why you're telling us that you didn't set them off when she told us that you did. I just don't understand, and I know I'm very young, but I was hoping perhaps you could clarify this for us. I don't understand why you have to be at odds with my Uncle Bilbo.
By the time you get to the end of this little monologue, by the way, you notice that it's gotten very quiet, and there's a circle now of at least 30 hobbits or so that are all silently listening to this conversation, and you can sort of feel the collected weight of their gaze fall upon Bruno, who clearly... I would like you to make a persuasion check for me, Coriander.
Titch is slightly outside the circle because he wandered off to get another beer.
Okay.
And so he's come back and it's like, oh, okay, my space has been taken up. So he's fine. He's just standing there.
All right. I will be up for an inspiration if anyone wants to give me one on this roll. But,
well, so there's the question. Live suing, I know you just redeemed one. Do you wanna throw an inspiration? You don't have to, but do you want to throw an inspiration Coriander's way? A Mal's way for Coriander. Yeah, I've heard of that quest. Three goblins in a trench coat. Yep, I've heard of that
quest. I was just thinking about that, but it was three kobolds in a trench coat when I was thinking about it.
I'm just seeing Hugh Man.
Yeah.
Does he work at the business factory?
Yes, where they make business.
And I work.
I actually was imagining it's sort of vaguely like Prudhomme, like Prudhomme, which is a former quarterback as well. Hey, Murr. It is good to see Murr here. Welcome, welcome. So anyway, yeah, quick check chat. Right. Inspirations, last chance or forever hold your peace. Going once. Going twice. You need to do this before the roll. Before the roll.
I will.
Well, okay. Live suing looks like he's going to. Yeah, oh. Amal would need an inspiration, theoretically, for Coriander to persuade her Uncle Bruno to tell her about the damn fireworks.
Yeah.
It's a lot riding on this, okay?
Exclamation point, inspire, we baby took.
Thank you, Live Suing. It's a good use of... inspiration.
Thank you so much.
Also means I don't have to keep track of it later, so thank you. All right. So you are now inspired. You may use that inspiration with this persuasion check.
Woo!
If I remember, I think I narrated something.
Oh, dang.
Nat 20!
Outstanding. Die. Bruno's like, I have been a terrible person. I'm so sorry. And I and you, what kind of a name is Rakomi? Slaps him across the face, gives you all gold. No, I'm just kidding.
Here's the key to the lockbox where all the fireworks are. And I put them...
Yeah, check out, by the way, the new animated, again, this is Arveny Got Good. That's the crit hit. I was waiting for that to pop up. You see the Arveny crit hit? So he got the roll 20. Oh, man, I love that. Oh, looks goes so good, Tari. Okay, and then Mur, is that a bucket? What is that, ice cream? What is that? It's a bucket spin.
It's like a bucket of purple stuff.
And it's got, and the bucket is a cute bucket with a smiley face. I love that.
Lord Bucket. Yes.
That's Murr's bucket. Well, I know it's a bucket. I was just curious what was bucket of. Anyway, it looks awesome. So, Bruno kind of,
Coriander's looking at him with her big, big saucer eyes, and she looks kind of sad about this whole situation, and everyone's real quiet, and yeah.
And so he takes a moment, and then he looks around. What are you all looking at? And all the hobbits like, you know, like all like drinking. Almost immediately the sort of noise picks up, and then he leans forward and he says, all right, listen, I passed, so I might have used perhaps a firework once or twice just to see what it was like, if you understand. I needed to know if it was dangerous, and there were a few children around, and perhaps they were entertained by it, just sort of by accident, you might say. Anyway, I passed them off to one of the hobbits working for my father, Blanco. And the Bilbo kind of like, well, which one? Well, Otho, Sackville Baggins. And Bilbo's eyes roll like on the other side of his head at hearing that Otho was given this. Bruno goes on to say, well, he agreed to take him back to Hardbottle after he stopped in Skerry for a pint. So that was the idea. And so Bilbo stops and he says, so you're saying that you gave these fireworks, Gandalf's fireworks, you set off two of them and then gave them to Otho to bring them back after he stopped for a pint in Skerry? And Bruno says, you see Bruno doing some mental calculations and, that's what I said. And Bilbo nods. I see. In the words of, my life has ended. No, he's very disappointed, and he says to you, Coriander. Bilbo turns and says, "Well done, child. That's well done. We have things to catch up with because someone has decided that it was okay to take flammable fireworks and put them in the hands of a drunkard, a drunk Sackville Baggins." And he says that and then he sort of turns and he says, thank you for your honesty, Bruno. As for your wits, and he just shakes his head and then sort of like storms off to where Balin is kind of like telling him to calm down. Bruno in the meantime is looking kind of after Bilbo and then looks back at you and he says, all right, now if you wouldn't mind just sort of not letting this get out to everyone, I'd appreciate it. I wouldn't want it to be misunderstood. And he kind of like gestures in the direction of Bilbo's furious back, which is turned on him.
Well,
wait, so Otho has them? Am I getting this right?
According to Bruno, Otho now has them, and Otho took them with him to
it's
the
not
north.
His uncle, that's his brother-in-law.
Yeah, well, he says no. He gave it to one of the hobbits working for his father, Blanco, which was one Otho Sackville Baggins.
Okay, so that's his brother-in-law who works.
That's his brother-in-law. That's Lobelia's husband.
Yeah, that's fine. But I'm saying, like,
he just works for Bruno's dad.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all.
Could have sworn the word uncle was in there.
No. He didn't say that. No.
Coriander's calling everybody uncle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She called Bruno Uncle Bruno, but that's more of like a, you know. You call everyone who is older than you uncle if they're vaguely related to you, even if they're technically your second or third cousin.
It's further than that in this case.
So apparently they are the ones who are heading up to Hardbottle and, quote, stopping in Skerry for a pint with these fireworks with them.
Oh, dear. So Coriander, like, actually, like, kind of goes after Bilbo, and she says,
Uncle Bilbo, I was not convinced of the urgency of this task before, because it seemed like your feelings about the fireworks were slightly disproportionate to the actual nature of the danger, but I have changed my mind, and I think it is very important that we recover these fireworks, I'm sorry I doubted you.
And Bilbo sort of, like, although he remains frustrated, obviously, with this whole situation, he still smiles and he puts a hand on your head and he says, well, I could never be angry at you anyway. You know, you've always been much the most sensible, with a little variation, of many people.
I'm sensible?
Well, with variations. Variations.
Granny, guess what? Granny, guess what? According to Uncle Bilbo, I am now sensible. It's a thing both you and my mommy and my daddy have been saying for years that they wished I was sensible, and now I am, according to Uncle Bilbo. And there's no take backs. Which is very happy.
I love the idea that Bilbo is now the arbiter of sensible, the hobbit behavior.
Yeah, Granny just looks like, well, that's lovely, dear.
Sensible.
Here's another caramel.
I'm so sensible. She starts making a little sensible song, and she's like, turns a little cartwheel.
Now, here's where this is going to be helpful. The map that you made is going to be helpful, Cal. Because, and the reason has to do, first of all, I should ask, so Bilbo, since it is already like after, you know, late afternoon, does not want to wait around. If the fireworks are already on their way back up, it's obviously going to be getting dark. He's worried about them being set off again, especially now that there's drunk people, especially that it's a drunk Sackville Baggins who might be doing it. So Bilbo is pushing hard to get going, and you folks are fairly well rested. The question is, if you're going to set off, so I want to ask this question first. Are you going to set off to the north then in pursuit? That's what Bilbo wants to do, but you don't have to just like trail around after Bilbo if you don't want to. But that's what Bilbo wanted to suggest that he does, that you all do, is to head north following to try to find Otho, who presumably would have these fireworks. So I want to ask that first, and then I'll come back to the map that Cal in a minute.
What is Otho's reputation?
It's not great. Even leaving aside Bilbo's own, let me put it this way. Leaving aside Bilbo's feelings about the Sackville Bagginses in general, it is definitely the case that Lobelia and Otho, Lobelia's always been the person who sort of calls the shots from what you can tell in their relationship and makes sort of the decisions for them. But that doesn't mean that Otho is some kind of stereotypical henpecked, you know, like it's not actually the case, because Otho also has his own kind of ambitions. You've always felt, Granny, like Otho is a little... Like, he kind of talks a big game about sort of like, I get to just call the shots. And, you know, like, he wants to be meaner than he actually is, but he really just doesn't necessarily have the guts to be really a mean guy, if you know what I mean. Like, so there's kind of a meanness sort of combined with a bit of a laziness in him.
Gives off the vibe like, oh, he would be a nicer person if he had, like, better companionship.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Right. In that case, Granny would turn to Bilbo and be like, it's been a long trip already, and all this walking, you know, should stock up on some proper provisions, you know. A hobbit needs to eat. So, maybe we can buy some nice food set on the road at, like, I'm assuming that this establishment that we are at, like, also serves food, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
In fact,
like,
there are a number of trays of roast
kind
chicken
of, like,
not far from you.
Cake cabinet or something with, like, freshly baked cakes and stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
As often is the case at, like, restaurants and cafes.
Yes.
I found.
There are, in fact.
Like, she points over there, like, you know.
And Bilbo sort of nods and is like, oh, yes, he seems slightly distracted, as if, like, you know, that's fine. And without thinking about it, pulls out a coin from his belt. And I want to be clear how casually he does this, that he pulls out a coin and you're just like, again, you know, Granny, and all of you would know that this coin is like again, like, that's enough. The coin that he's suggesting would be enough to feed all of you for like a week, you know? And he's just kind of like, here, and like tosses it over to you like it's nothing. Not because he's trying to be like, check out my flex, but because he doesn't think about this. Like, he just is like, yeah, whatever, money here. Like, because he's obviously worried about getting back the fireworks. So he is perfectly willing to fund your fuel for your expedition, if you will.
So, like, what is this then? Like a gold coin or whatever?
The equivalent of it, yeah. Enough that you could get multiple, probably, roast chickens and potatoes and root vegetables and definitely some honey cakes.
Just like, what?
Yeah. And some honey cakes, although not Bjorn's honey cakes.
Aw.
Can we get all chickens? Titch says.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, Granny grabs a coin and looks at Titch. You brought a backpack, right? We are going shopping.
Is this backpack, by the way, lined with a cooler? Like, what? He just puts a chicken in a backpack? Is that how this goes?
Well, I mean, it should be fine. It's like eaten the same day, right?
Right, yeah.
I just had this image of like an aluminum foil covered chicken that you just stick in a kid's backpack, and I was like,
"No, it's like twisted up into the shape of a swan."
Okay, right. That's the important part. Okay, I like the image.
So
that
we buy like all the nicest provisions, and of course, okay, way too fucking much. We're going to be eating like beans today.
Right. I hope you're going to put all of these mostly in Titch's backpack so that there's just this like crush of like, you know, chicken leg and like, you know, drumstick foil bits like just sticking out, whatever. Oh my god. Anyone
like
else
fresh
buying
fruit and
yeah, any other provisions that are of the non-edible variety whatnot that anyone wants?
Wax thread.
Yeah, wax thread maybe. Go ahead, Cal.
I wish Bolo was here so we could use those chicken bones for like soup. And
yeah.
When Arv was describing, you know, coriander moving up on the table stealthily, I just imagined like some of the other people going, you know, I was in Dale recently and I went to this place called the Battered Mug.
Wait, is there like time overlap with that? I don't remember. I need to look up what time what year the other campaign was in.
I do love the thought that our like, you know, God, what level did we get to?
85.
Level like eight or nine. Might have been nine.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
I just love the idea of our level 9 characters encountering our hobbits. I think that'd be delightful. Like,
that would be interesting. I have not completely, you know, given up on that possibility as an option at some point. I actually want
to
look.
Kel wants to get a couple of ropes, and in fact, a grapnel. Knowing the area as he does, he's actually a little bit concerned that we might have to go to the quarry, and ropes are always useful anyway.
Okay, that seems reasonable. You actually reach level 10 at the very end, so. you're able to do that. Whitfurrow's is not an enormous place, but big enough that you can get basic, you know, kind of equipment like that, some sturdy ropes, and things like that.
Especially
and even some
in late summer, because the grasses will have grown really
well.
And
that's right.
The ropes would be freshly made.
And they do know, you know, people are just like, well, ropes are always like, no, you farming communities need ropes all the time. So do shipbuilding communities. So to like, I actually, I live not about an hour away or so from Old Mystic Seaport. And they have a huge building which is the same kind of building they used to use, where they actually tied the massive ropes that are used to hold ships. And it was a twisting building. So it's basically a thing where they have all the threads of the rope that are twisted together, and they would have horses walking down as the ropes are being twisted by hand and tarred, because you're tarring the rope as well. But like, it was wild how big the building is, because it had to be super long because you can't have rain falling on it when you're trying to. And also, it must have stunk to high heaven making it in late summer with the kind of the tar and everything. Like,
I will say though, pine tar smells amazing.
Yeah, but that's like fair, but yeah. Oh no, for sure. But like, I think something about the way this is, I don't remember the description, but they said that it would stink pretty badly. Like, people could pass out from the fumes, maybe just because of the pungency of it. But a rope walk, that's what it was called.
Way,
yeah, tripping. A rope walk.
Sorry.
Yes, I know
we
the word.
One year after the last campaign.
Ah, okay. Right. I thought it was within the same ballpark. Okay, so once you've got
we're 1 year after. Yeah.
So once you have those things, then you were able to set off so that it is probably early, just early evening, you know, maybe like 7 or 8. So sun basically setting quickly. And after an hour or two, as you're going along, Bilbo sort of in better spirits because he feels like at least he's, you know, in pursuit of this thing and he knows exactly where he's going. Balin has been pretty quiet the whole time. Being hot pursuit. I know, I thought about that as he's walking up. And then you all hear a in the distance. And it is not the sound of fireworks. And Balin says, well, we'll have to have our spare cloaks about us. It appears the storms are coming to us before we get to the fireworks. And that is where we are going to bring our session to a close for today. Woo-hoo! By the way, in case anyone's curious, halfway through about Most Excellent Fireworks. As I told you, this is considerably shorter. So, but I am so happy that we got to get back into this. It just makes me smile every time. I was really happy about that. I will start with... gentlemen, bottom right, Tren, fun stuff today with Titch. I admit that I was using a little bit of this. This was going to avoid any of the why would I come on this trip, but I knew if I used the lore of roast chickens. But also that and the fact that there is a little bit of a, I feel this also plays into Titch's safety dad persona where there'd be a bit of this like, wait a minute, people are setting off fireworks illegally. This cannot stand, you know. So I had this image of both of those things in mind. And we'll see what happens as we move out of the civilized lands and sadly away from chickens and move into, you know, this more still civilized land, but, you know, into an area that's maybe a little wilder and not quite as sort of traditionally safe. And so it was fun to watch Titch sort of in the background watching to see what was going to happen next with Bruno, Bilbo, Primrose, etc. How'd you feel about today's session? Where will the fine folks find you next?
First... asterisk snugs a fox. That's not how I usually say it. Snugs him some fox. There we go. That's what I usually say. I really liked today. I thought it was awesome. There's just the idea. I seem to keep leaning more and more and more into Titch just being like a combat version of Shaggy.
And a combat Shaggy, if you will.
Combat Shaggy, yeah. Battle Shaggy.
Ooh, Battle Shaggy. I like that better.
Battle Shaggy. Yoinks.
It's just
yoinks.
Yoinks. Well, now you have to write that story, Brad. Now we need Combat Shaggy with yoinks.
Yeah. So. It'll be the sequel to The King Must Fall. It'll be great. He was ready to throw hands and spears. He was just anything, just a spear just bang, into the tabletop. Just, you know, kind of thing. But it didn't come up, so that's fine. Really enjoyed it. As always, had a lot of fun. Love playing with this group because we have just such a brilliant mixture of in character antics and out of character antics, and it just makes everything flow really well.
Yes.
Anyway, who am I playing? No, that was before. Let's see. Where will people see me next?
Yes.
That's a great question. Here, signed up Saturday, whatever day that is.
Right, for some Eberron as we get back, which is, speaking of intense, that thing is intense in another way. With campaigns and fighting. Oh, by the way, I wanted to tell you very quickly about this, that I read a fascinating article and I want to recommend it to everybody in the New York Times, which I admit has lots of problems, but this article was about, but not Amal's part of it, so leave that part out. But it was about inmates on death row in Texas playing Dungeons and Dragons. Like, really, really interesting, very moving in a lot of ways. I didn't think, like, the prose is fine. Like, I didn't think the prose was like, it's the best, but it's very interesting and is further proof of why Dungeons and Dragons is so great. Why do I bring this up with you, Tren? Because one of the characters.
I'm a convict.
Yeah, right. No. Because you're from, because of Texas. No. The real reason for all those is because the character that one of the guys created, this is a guy, I won't spoil it for you, but one of the guys on death row is from Eberron, Decaneth, who talked about the experience of being an artificer and about how it gave him some like control over his life because he could build it in a different way. And I was just like, most of the people reading this, A, are not going to know very much about D&D, and they sure as hell won't know much about Eberron, and they'll know even less about Decaneth. But I was just like, what are the odds? Like, I know about all of these things because of this. If you get a chance to read that, I highly recommend that, Chad. It'll be a further examination of why on earth we still have a death penalty in 2023. But secondly, about Dungeons & Dragons and the incredible way in which it can energize and inspire even in dark places. So anyway, mm-hmm. Sorry, I just wanted to bring that up.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So aside from that, being here on Saturday, wow, we just covered that and I forgot it already. And since I know that Murr is in chat, I cannot remember which of your works I narrated, and it's driving me up the wall. I'm sure it was for Escape Pod. Ugh, bugging me. Anyway, right. I was trying to flip through them and find it. And I'm like, no, I don't know. It may have been whatever. So, but I did narrate something that Murr. Anyway, so the other place that you can see, or rather hear me, there is a furry comic called Sweet Leaves that is about a tanuki whose wife basically loses her battle with postpartum depression, and he is recovering from that and raising his son by himself when he meets this badger named Sebastian, and they fall in love, and so Toby grows up with two dads. Aww. And it's a beautiful comic. The beautiful cartoony style, it's really really great. But the guy who's making it and has been making it was going to make it into a visual novel, and part one has gone up on YouTube, and of course I start touting it on Blue Sky and trying to tell everybody about it and everything, and he's like, actually I think I'm just going to shift it back to unlisted and then just, you know, release it all as one big movie instead. I'm like, I'm trying to get people to pay attention. He's like, no, it's not. I'm not setting it private. It's just unlisted. People can still find it. So this URL is what goes to that thing. So it's like 18 and a half minutes long or so if you want to check it out. And I voice Sebastian the Badger, who has a bakery called Badger Cakes. And his big thing is everything's better when it's made with love. And the tanukis are yokai. They're like magical creatures that can, you know, summon things, and the video explains it. It's fun and it's awesome and it's wonderful. And when Coulson and I were recording our respective parts, Coulson being the guy who made it, whenever he's delivering his part about his wife, the character's wife dying and everything, he just breaks down crying during the thing, because it's what his character's supposed to do. And of course, because we're recording it live on the thing. And so I start crying while he's crying. And then I have to rein myself in so that I can deliver my lines of my part where my character starts crying. And then I can hear him sniffling, and it's shut up! You're making this. Anyway, it's a lot of fun, and it's very cool. So go and check that out, and I will see you folks on Saturday.
Thanks, Trent. Good stuff. I like this. And thank you, Triffitt. I forgot about that. The Marshall Project was a partner in this, so they have a free link, and you should absolutely go and click on the Marshall Project's links all the time, because the Marshall Project does great work, and you can get to that same thing. The person who wrote the story, by the way, was herself incarcerated when she was younger. So, yeah, just very cool. But thanks, Trent. Good stuff as always. Mm-hmm. Tari, also wonderful stuff as always from Granny. I had...
Thank you, Daddy.
I had very much... This was a chance to get a little bit of the family history in, as we got to develop a little bit more about who belonged to whom at what times and where, and keeping track of which generations would know each other the most or least or whatever was a part of this, so that, like, you know, Granny and Primrose would be obviously of an age, and then you have like what the son's generations would be and so on. So it was interesting to kind of see that part of things getting played out, and, you know, Granny may have we'll have to see what Granny has to think about in terms of like foraging and stuff like that, although I don't know how well you can do that in a rainstorm. We'll find out next time. How'd you feel about today's session? Where will the fine folks find you next, Harry?
Well, this was quite delightful. And yeah, I'm so glad I got to use a family tree that I wrote up.
Yep. Like, yep. I saw your eyes light up at one point. You're like, just a moment. Like, pulls her screen.
So much work like, to
do. Okay? I was waiting for you to pull out like an actual paper scroll and like just running out that way.
I should make that, honestly.
Remember that shot from A Beautiful Mind, you know, where things are just kind of floating in the air?
And yeah. Or the Winona Ryder meme like where like she's giving the award and she's like, you know, like all the X's and what. Yes, yes.
Oh, man. I haven't seen that one, I'm afraid. So, rip. But yeah, that was great fun. And yeah, people can find me here next Tuesday.
Yes.
At presumably the regular time.
Yes, regular time, noon to 3 Eastern. Yeah.
And 6 p.m. Central European time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and otherwise people can find me on Tumblr at Tari Toons and also at Tari's Backyard. Like one is for my art, one is for everything else. And for those of you who are still on the platform formerly known as Twitter, if you haven't heard, they have updated their what's it called? Terms of service or whatever. Basically, if from now on you post any images of any kind, you agree to them using that kind of stuff or AI shit. So if you haven't left yet, now is a great time. Come to Tumblr. We are also shit, but not that way.
kind of shit.
not as worse as that could be. But yeah, people can find me there where I post my art. Some time ago, I started a webcomic called Penelope's Little Heraldry, which now that I have my PC back, I can actually get back to. But first, I need to finish Baldur's Gate, so...
All right, so in 2028.
Which is basically a comic about teaching people about heraldry in like the most simple terms that I can muster and with like easy examples and shit like that. So if you at any point want to know what kind of shit I'm going on about sometimes here when I start to rant about stuff, that will help you understand things. So yeah, go find me there. Oh, I'm also on Instagram where I barely post, so that's at Tari Toons as well, so go find me there.
Thanks, Tari. Always a pleasure. And again, thank you to Tari for all of that huge host of emotes you saw us using today. They came out really great. And again, a new picture coming, new Shire Adventures swag is coming to the shop. That's going to be coming very soon. We just have to basically do the... and actually, Shire Adventures players, so I don't forget, let's think of and settle on a term that we think we can use that won't get like past copyright and that would stand for the four of you as a group. Like, you know, the
chicken eaters,
the chicken eater. I don't know, something that, you know, figure out something, and then Tari's art will do the rest because I want to make sure we get that up and I can send you all shirts and stuff. So anyway, but thank you, Tari, so much. Great stuff as always. I will see you next week. Brad, good stuff as well from Cal. I'm excited for Cal's map making because, and I kept promising this would be the case, but we'll start this way if I don't remind me that your map is going to make it easier to traverse this, like, you know, rainy, muddy weather so that you don't have a repeat of Burning Man. Sorry. I can't believe I just brought that up. And
are we going to the playa?
It chuckled. You know.
Is it the next stop?
I don't know. Are you a billionaire thinking that it matters? Oh, no. Did I say something about Burning Man audiences? Anyway, but it's going to be exciting to see Cal's map-making skills in that regard. And also, I don't know if such a thing as what I described as the protection for the map actually exists as a thing. I just hope so, because I think it would be really awesome as someone, you know what I mean, with having to like walk around with even battle maps for D&D. Like, I wish there was something that I could just fold that flat and it'd be safe. So anyway, slight gift from Bilbo to you. How'd you feel about today's session? Where will the fine folks find you next?
Yeah, it was fun. It's going in different directions than I thought it was going to, which is always fun, you know. So now we're going into the unknown. We thought we kind of had this nailed down, but now it's taking a turn. So that's always fun. So looking forward to the next adventure for sure. People can find me at quillings.com. And then as Trent alluded to, as soon as this is done, I'm going to be reaching out to Adrian Collins, the owner and publisher of Grimdark Magazine, about the follow-up to The King Must Fall, the new anthology, Grimscoob. So, we'll see how that goes.
Grimscoob! Oh, man. I can't wait. There it is. Yep, exactly. Well, you're also responsible for... do you remember what we came up with at the symposium some years ago as a counteracting force to the rise of Grimdark at the time?
Lightbright.
it was our idea to be like Lightbright. I'm sure that everyone would be fine with that. You know, right. Glenn Cook and company would be like, and Joe Abercrombie would be like, wait, what? Anyway, where like if you're a bunny and you see something that makes you upset, that's like the darkest that Lightbright ever actually
did. Right. So, and then you hop across the flower field to the top of the hill where there's less shadow.
It was just, yeah. Oh, man, at the time. Anyway, but always a pleasure, Brad. And definitely, again, be on the lookout for Dragons of Deepwood Fen. I'm serious. That is a good book. And I'm happy for Brad that it's getting out there in the world soon. Thank you, Brad. Thank we you. Will see you back here soon. Last but certainly not least, Mal, wonderful stuff as always from Coriander 2. And I really love the idea that Coriander has this kind of like the irrepressibility, of course, has always been the most charming characteristic of Coriander. But I think in this case, too, there is a sense of like it is hard unless you're just a complete jackass. Like if you really hate people, then I guess you can be cruel to anyone. But it's hard if you have a person who's kind of prickly, but then you just sort of like overwhelm them with like, hi, I like you, and I'm completely unconscious of the fact that you're being prickly. Then at a certain point, they're just sort of helpless. They're like, well, you know, which is sort of what was going on with Primrose.
It's kind of a litmus test of their character when someone
right
them with kindness, you know.
That's right. And actually, like, Coriander in a way is a litmus test for a lot of things, I think, depending on how you react to Coriander, many things change. So I really enjoyed watching Coriander operate, and I think even the failure of the stealth led to a really interesting, you know, fun thing later on. And obviously the persuasion was very clutch, so that was important to find out exactly who had these fireworks next. How'd you feel about today's session? Where will the fine folks find you next?
I always worry a little bit about just taking up too much space with Coriander, even though that is like her deal, but it seemed like there was a kind of just gotta talk to people, and that is a thing that she sure is good at doing, and so the it just seemed like a thing for her to do, but I really, really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the fact that we're moving through Hobbit society, which continues to be like just such a. Sometimes I get this like dual vision in my head from the previous campaign to this one, and how in that one we were always moving into new situations where we were strangers and needed to kind of sometimes we were in each other's places and stuff like that, but mostly we were always strangers. But in this case, everyone knows everyone, and I think that's kind of it's lovely and its own neat thing to navigate, like the fact that like Granny and Cal and Coriander can basically assume that they have met most people who Bilbo knows who mm-hmm. are hobbits, mm-hmm. right? Like,
very much not stranger in a strange land, very much, right?
Yeah, and I think that's really cool. Like, it's actually at the same time, I'm reading a book right now that I'm really enjoying that's going to come out soon called The Scandalous Confessions of Lydia Bennet Witch. And it's like, it's a Pride and Prejudice slant retelling where, like, what if everything in Pride and Prejudice but Lydia, the one who runs off with Wickham in the book, was actually a young witch and had her own side of the story to tell, and it was very fun. It's great. And then, but there's a similar society vibe, even though like this is not high society mm-hmm. among hobbits, mm-hmm. it's the sociability of it is really fun to be in, so I really, really like it. I really love Bruno and Bilbo just icing at each other. That was great. It was really nice. Yeah, anyway, where people can find me next, here, but also, I wanted to say, because I didn't get a chance to say last time, in August, I had two short stories come out in two separate anthologies that kind of bookended the month. So on the 1st of August, this book came out, which is The Book of Witches.
Oh,
aha.
And I have a short story in here that closes out the anthology. It's called John Hollowback and the Witch. And it was the first short story that I wrote after like a 4-year dry spell. I found it very hard to write while I was teaching. So anyway, that's in there and I'm very proud of it. But there's also, let me just grab it. The thing I'm really excited about is this book, which is from a certain point of view, an anthology of like, what if a bunch of minor characters from Return of the Jedi had their own short story, and I wrote the one that opens this anthology, so they're like,
about which character?
Tian Jar Jarad, who is the guy in the opening of Return of the Jedi when Darth Vader arrives at the unfinished Death Star.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's met by a minor bureaucrat there.
That's that,
like,
guy.
Vader, with a pleasure to see that guy.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's that guy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Does anyone do Nia Numb? The secret power behind the throne, Nia Numb?
Oh, I don't know. I have not had a chance to actually dive. There are 40 stories in the anthology.
I knew it was big, yeah.
Wow.
They do it as, it's a 40-year anniversary since the film. So they go 40 stories for the 40 years. So they did one for A New Hope and one for Empire Strikes Back. And this is Return of the Jedi. Anyway, that just came out on the 29th of August. So both of those are out. I hope you enjoy them if you read them. I cannot believe what Disney let me get away with in this story. It's very, very, I think you just have to read it. Because I don't think
is it meant to be canon?
It's canon!
Or what if?
It's canon. It
it's right, yeah. I have this image of some marketing exec, right, is just sort of sitting back there. He's like, I'm going to watch this Twitch. And then he sees,
yeah,
he's like,
oh, so
what has happened? Like, give me a copy of this film.
The things that I cannot tell, like, when you were earlier, when you were saying, oh, these chickens are not, like, you know, scaled down for hobbits, they're normal size. I wanted to say, like, the copy editing process for this story, it went through many layers of, like, continuity experts.
Sure, okay.
And at some point, I had someone say, like, choking on a chicken bone. And the correction was, there are no chickens in the Star Wars universe. They have tip-yips. So you could say it is a tip-yip bone. And I was like, I will not be doing that. It's just going to be a bone. She could be eating something. But anyway. but it was just, it was a cool process to go through. But anyway, all to say, there were a lot of continuity layers. And I kept waiting for someone to be like, we can't do this. And no one said that.
That's cool. Well, I don't know if he did this actually, but my friend Brian Young, who's an author that Brad probably knows from the symposium,
yeah.
Brian is a big and you narrated one of his books, Trent. But he does tons of continuity for Star Wars. Like he named his kids like Anakin and Scout, right? Like, I mean, he knows, he's forgotten more about Star Wars than I will ever know. So he does a ton of continuity. I was just talking to him about that at the symposium, about continuity checks. And I wonder if he was one of the people doing that for the stories. That'd be cool. But anyway, very cool. Yes, you folks should check that out. That's good stuff, man. That's interesting. So, and it was lovely to have all of my Shire Adventures folks back. I was really happy to get back in the wagon with this. We will have a second session later this month, which will definitely wrap up most, well, I think definitely, wrap up most excellent fireworks, as we move into the home stretch of the Shire Adventures campaign after that. So chat, can we get some love for the amazing and awesome Amal Almatar, Brad Bollier, Atari Toons, and Trend Sparks. Thanks, players. Great work. And I will see you folks soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye
for now. Bye.
All right. That is going to do it for that. And I'm really glad, actually. Again, I have a little bit of a sore throat, but not bad. And I really... hold on a second. I really was wanting to get into this. Like, I was like, I'm so tired of having things come up that made scheduling difficult. August is always difficult for scheduling anyway, because everyone's away on vacation. There's convention stuff going on all the time. And now as we settle into the fall, there'll be things here and there, but for the most part, there'll be a lot of good stuff. So very excited about what's going to happen going forward with this crew.